Welcome to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Oral History Project, where we record the oral histories of current and former DOC employees. I'm DOC Communications Director Susan McNaughton. This oral history focuses on memories from the October 1989 riot at the State Correctional Institution at Camp Hill. Our guest today, September 27th, 2019, is Bill Sprinkle. Thank you for joining us, Bill.
Oh, thank you. Welcome to be here.
As we begin this interview, could you please provide us with a brief overview of your DOC career?
Sure. I started with the DOC in 1976, actually as a part-timer while I was, actually I started in 1975 as a part-timer while I was in college. And I worked in community corrections at the York Community halfway house at the time, and later went into the staff training area where I worked at the Eastern Training Academy as the assistant chief, and about a year and a half later I transferred to the Central Training Academy at Camp Hill as an assistant chief. And then a few years later, I became the chief of the training academy, and was then promoted to the chief of state training, and eventually director of staff training and development, and later was promoted to deputy secretary for administration. And after about 2 years as deputy for administration, I was promoted to executive deputy secretary. And I stayed in that position to the time that I retired, which was April 10th, 2010.
Wow, great career. I can't believe you're almost 10 years retired.
I know. I was thinking about that yesterday, Sue. I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
I thought my math must be wrong.
But retirement is treating you well.
Yes, it is.
Good. All right. Well, thank you for that overview. That's fantastic. And so now let me set the stage for this interview, which is the Camp Hill riot.
Right.
So it is Wednesday, October 25th, 1989. It's about 2:33 o'clock. Where are you and what is happening?
Okay. On that particular day, we had a class in session on Utley Drive, we were notified that there was a disturbance at the Camp Hill institution, and we were dispatched over, and we went into what was to be the command post at the central office and provided technical assistance to the executive team.
And where was that command post located? Was that in the commissioner's office?
That was prior to us having a real solid emergency preparedness program in place. And we spent some time in the conference room and probably most of the time in the commissioner's complex.
Okay. Wow. I don't remember seeing you, but you must have been very busy and in that room the entire time. So the commissioner's office and his conference room were on the far side of the building, facing away from the institution. Didn't everybody eventually move over to Deputy Doremus's office to have kind of
they
a...
They did.
Okay.
For a better view.
Yeah. So who was in the room with you?
Well, we were sort of in and out of the command. We were really providing technical assistance at that time. Again, because it was prior to us having our CERT teams in place and an emergency preparedness system where we had a real solid command post procedures, it was really just a sporadic thing. For instance, what type of weaponry we should be arming our staff with, what about the perimeter, securing the perimeter? What was it going to be our best way of doing that? It was just really more in the tactical area in terms of our involvement at that point.
Okay, so let's talk real quick about weapons. Did we have enough?
Okay.
Did we have enough?
Well, we certainly had enough initially, but as we got more staff on site, we were really running out of, we were limiting ourselves to shotgun usage. And in fact, many of us brought our personal weapons on site.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then, so you mentioned securing the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
How was that done?
Well, Camp Hill took the lead on it. They just dispatched staff to, you know, surround the area and local police. We had even the fire department involved at some point, adding additional perimeter security. So it was a rather quick process to secure the perimeter. A very, very quick response.
Okay. And when you talk about your the command post that you were involved in, there was also a command post set up just, you know, a football field away at the institution at the superintendent's office, correct?
Yes.
So
yes, that is correct.
So everybody in the command post up at central office was in like constant contact by phone, I guess, speakerphone with the superintendent and his command post.
That's correct.
Okay. Wow. All right, so tell me, you're in Doremus' office. What are you seeing out the window?
Well, actually, we spent some of the time in Deputy Doremus' office, and then we spent a lot of time outside. Actually, we were on a roof portion of the old central office building where we had more of an aerial view.
Uh-huh.
And it was more, at that point, initially, it was really an observation period. And, you know, obviously the state police at that point were involved. They were dispatched. That was really our limited involvement on that particular day, the first day.
Okay. And who was up on the roof with you?
Oh, it was a lot of central office staff, and I believe there was some Camp Hill staff there as well, because of it was just a perfect view of to be able to see exactly what was happening, to watch, observe the inmate movement. You know, we could actually see them moving hostages around the complex.
Right. And so for the listeners, the way central office was positioned, it was outside of the perimeter fence, not far outside the perimeter fence, but it was perfectly positioned where the view was on the compound in between all of the six housing units, which is where a majority of the rioting activities took place. So it was the perfect view.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
It was a very good view.
And so things were on fire. And then finally it ended. Do you remember how it ended? Or tell me, like, do you remember what time you went home? Did you go home?
You know, yeah, I don't recall exactly what time went home. I'm suspecting it was probably somewhere around 7 or 8 in the evening. And then I got a call to respond right around 10 p.m. That night. When the riot again was initiated.
Okay, so let me back up. So the first night kicked off at around 3 p.m. at E-Gate and
right.
went to about 11. There was feeding going on and everything. And then the next day, which was Thursday, October 26th, everybody reported to work for a regular day.
Right.
It wasn't until later that night, around 6:30, 7 o'clock, that the second rioting started.
That's correct.
Okay.
And I don't know exactly what time that evening. I know it was late in the evening. I got a call. Camp Hill wanted us, the academy team, to participate in the initial movement into the institution. And when we got there, we had our weapons, and we met a handful of Camp Hill staff, primarily commissioned officers, and at that point it was prior to a state police deployment, and we had a large state police deployment. We still had a few state police on hand from the prior day,
mm-hmm.
But it was our job to go in particularly to the RHU, to try to secure it. And at that point, it was really smoke-filled quarters. It was extremely difficult getting around the complex. But that was our initial assignment.
And the RHU was actually in Group 1.
That was in Group 1,
and
correct.
The night before, the writing was contained to Groups 2 and 3.
2 and 3.
Okay, so when you got there that second night, the inmates had already busted through into the Group 1 area?
They have.
Okay. And so,
yeah,
go ahead.
They have, and there were fires, and there was a lot of smoke, and we were concerned in the RHU about the inmates that actually couldn't get out of their cells at that point. We were afraid that they would be significantly overcome by smoke and potentially even fire.
Wow.
So we went in, and it was really our job to try to get the inmates out that were confined in there and to try to control the inmates that were running freely on the ranges.
So did you move the RHU inmates who were confined out into another area?
Yeah, we moved them into the rear stockade.
Okay. Wow. All right. And then what happened after that?
Well, then it was just really a matter of, you know, waiting for the state police tactical team to, you know, basically subdue the inmates. And once they were subdued, we moved all the inmates out into the stockade and kept them there until we were ready to move them back in. And that was a very tedious process because there was so much property damage. I think it was like 14 buildings that were significantly damaged. So we, prior to moving the inmates in, we were part of the team that went through and searched for weapons and other sorts of contraband. We knew there had to be a lot of weapons around because of the number of tools that were missing. So we just went from housing unit to housing unit and basically rid them of all the belongings.
Right. I did interview some people. They said that we, you know, everybody just kind of cleaned the cells, dumped the stuff over the tier rails into the center, and a bobcat came and pushed everything out into dumpsters.
Yeah, exactly. It really wasn't an issue of going through inmate items looking for contraband. It was really just a process of cleaning out the whole unit.
Right.
All content.
Yes.
Mattresses, everything. We would throw it into the middle of the range, and then a bobcat would come through and just push it out the rear.
So then, now we did kind of skip over the whole assault and taking back of the facility. Did you see that? Did you participate in any of that?
We participated sort of as backup to the state police, but it was primarily the state police tactical team that did the initial sweep.
Mm-hmm.
And we were more in the background, you know, providing some cover for them.
Okay.
There was a barricade that was in place that the inmates constructed between Group 2 and 1. And we were on the Group 1 side, and the inmates were on the Group 2 side.
Right.
And that's where we basically stayed until the tactical team was able to come in and move beyond that barricade.
I've talked to a number of people who were in that same area, and they said during the time of just waiting that the inmates were from, I guess, E block, were throwing Molotov cocktails and all kinds of tools and weapons.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they certainly were, you know, trying to instigate. They certainly wanted us to come forward, but we were, you know, people were at least trained well enough to maintain some control, and we stayed there and just held them in place until the state police tactical team arrived.
Mm. And somebody did mention to me that back then the emergency plan was the state police kind of resolved the situation.
That's correct. Up until that point, the agreement was that the state police would be the responding authority.
Right.
Yeah, we really weren't integrated well with the state police at that time.
And boy, did they respond, because I think I read in my recent research that probably about 800 state police officers, troopers, reported to the institution.
It really was an incredible number of state police who responded.
Right. And also our own staff from a number of our institutions as well.
That's right. We brought in our teams from really all across the state, and they provided wonderful assistance, particularly for the state police.
Okay, so let's fast forward again to the part where we've cleaned out the inmate cells, and you played a role in that. What was next for you?
Well, once the institution was under control, it was really a priority to get the facility clean. And you know, once we got the housing units cleared out, and we got the inmates back into the housing units, then it was time to clean up the damage. Mm. And we were fortunate at the time that we had a basic training class in, I believe it was class number 413. And we basically used the students to assist the Camp Hill staff in cleaning up. They provided just a wonderful service that was very, very critical. And the cleanup was just massive.
Now, I want to ask you real quick about those poor trainees. What a way to enter your career, to see the worst that inmates can do. And of course, you know, your career continued many years after that. Have you run into any of those trainees since then? And have you just talked about their beginning?
Yeah, I can't say that I ran into them afterwards, but certainly we had a lot of discussions with the trainees while they were still in training. And it was really, I mean, it was an unbelievable experience for them. It's certainly not one that you would hope to see, but the actual hands-on really complemented the classroom instruction that they received. Mm-hmm. So it was, in many ways, it was really a good experience in spite of the disaster, the destruction.
Mm. Amazing. And so we know, as a result of the riot, yes, there were some people who were injured, severely injured, but there were some good things that came out of the riot. And can you talk to us about how the riot changed our system and in what ways?
Oh, yeah, it was the most significant event that really positively impacted the DOC, particularly in the area of staff training and emergency preparedness. Prior to the Camp Hill riot, training, it was okay, but it certainly wasn't updated to the point where, you know, we were being well trained, or the staff were being well trained to handle large disturbances. Our equipment was seriously outdated. Basically, at that point, prior to the Camp Hill riot, our tactical equipment basically consisted of old tactical equipment that we got from state surplus. A lot of it came from the Pennsylvania State Police. Mm. And while we had individual CERT teams, the training was very limited to basically fundamental movements, crowd control, those sort of things. And we really didn't have a well-coordinated emergency preparedness system in place. It was really just a matter of getting key staff together and brainstorming and making certain that we got the proper decision making from the executive staff. Mm-hmm. After the riot, we coordinated much better with other agencies, including the state police, including PEMA, and others. So it took us from really behind the eight ball to a leader in staff training and emergency preparedness.
Wow. And let's talk about the specialty teams that came out of the riot. So the facilities had CERT teams, and somebody said that the training really just wasn't comprehensive enough. So can you talk
right.
to me about how that was enhanced, and then all the different specialty teams that came out of it, and how those specialty teams then made us less reliant on others to come to our aid?
Sure. Yeah, prior to the Camp Hill riot, as you mentioned, we were basically dependent on the Pennsylvania State Police to respond to emergencies. And the training prior to that was just a matter of crowd control, basic baton techniques, some fundamental firearms training. After the Camp Hill riot, we basically started over again in terms of the format of the training. It was very tactical. It was very well organized. In addition to the better training, we were able to procure more up-to-date equipment, including firearms and restraining devices. And we knew that we needed to specialize in some areas, and consequently, we developed our specialized teams to include the hostage rescue teams, the hostage negotiating teams, and our rifle teams. Mm-hmm. And we were able, again, because we had the resources at that point to do it, we were able to really work with some leading agencies and organizations in the country to help make all that happen.
Right. Very impressive. I've been to several demonstrations of different teams, corrections rifle specialist teams. Very interesting watching them hit a target from far away. So they certainly are top notch. And I think another thing too that goes with the special teams is the fact that there's mandatory training requirements to help keep them fresh.
Right.
And also, you know, we're always looking for the best equipment to help them. And, you know, technology changes, so obviously we have to keep up on that. So,
correct.
It started 30 years ago, but it is still continuing even today. And somebody did mention that the creation of the different specialty teams actually was a huge morale booster for not only SCI Camp Hill, but the entire DOC, especially immediately after the riot.
It really was. It was an incredible difference once we made a full commitment to redesign our staff training and specifically the emergency preparedness aspects of the DOC. And it was a huge morale boost. It gave staff the confidence that they needed at that point, knowing now that if in fact we had another Camp Hill riot, the process or the response would be very, very different.
Right. Excellent. So what other things do you recall that you'd like to share?
Well, you know, I think the important thing is the impact that it had on the DOC, and, you know, that's what we've been spending some time here talking about. It was, in spite of all the damage and the injuries, it really did create a landmark for the DOC in terms of really turning around the agency in staff training, emergency preparedness. Overall staff morale was a huge boost. It opened eyes and taught lessons.
Mm. I do remember, you know, for a good while after the riot, when people would talk about things, they would always use this phrase, that was before the riot or since the riot. So it really was that one kind of pivotal point in our corrections history.
It really was. And one of the things that I recall is, you know, right after the Camp Hill riot, when we decided to just totally redo what we were doing, you know, we became DOC proud, and that was a slogan that we used throughout the years, probably up to this date.
Oh, so that came really from the riots?
That really came from the riots.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that cool? Well, I'll use that hashtag in my project, DOC Products.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and that's another thing, too, that I think we learn, you know, over the years, when you have a good period of quiet time, where, and by that I mean where you don't have major incidents, people kind of become lax. They kind of forget, you know, what happened, and they are stuck in their day-to-day stuff, and they start kind of nitpicking with each other, like security versus treatment and so forth. But when you finally do have a huge situation like this, it actually kind of pulls you together. And we have such a group of dedicated and loyal and skilled staff that they come together despite their differences and just get done what needs to be done.
Exactly. They really do. And that's one of the values of good staff training. Corrections is the type of work where complacency is always our enemy. And while we don't want real emergencies, we do require that we run complacency drills. And it's important that all of us remind ourselves of the potential consequences and make certain that we know just what to do in those circumstances. And the other thing it really does, it brings us all together. It really doesn't matter if you're in food service or if you're in medical or if you're in whatever department of the DOC. When there's an emergency, we all have a very, very vital role to play. And we just need to constantly make certain that we're on the top of our game.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Did you have anything else you wanted to share?
No, so that's about it.
Okay.
It's been a long time since I've thought about the Camp Hill ride.
I know. I've talked to a lot of people, and some have said that they have never talked about it as much as they have with these recent interviews that I've been doing, and a lot of them said it was very cathartic for them. So I hope, you know, that the last thing I want to do through these interviews is re-traumatize anybody, but this agency has not been very good at collecting its history, and I'm getting ready to retire, and just thought, this is stuff we need to capture and send over to state archives for future generations. So,
Sue, I am so glad you're doing this. This is a wonderful thing to do.
Thank you.
It really is. In spite of the fact that it may open some wounds, the process is certainly very, very valuable. And, you know, we can't forget about the Camp Hill riot.
Right.
And, you know, that's always a fear of ours. And, you know, I don't know how many people in the Department of Corrections today were there at the time of the Camp Hill riot, but my guess is it's not a large percentage of the total workforce.
You're right. And another thing that I noticed while talking to, you know, the 30-some people that I've interviewed is that a lot of them still choke up about it, and they have their own reasons for that. Some feel guilty because it was their day off and they weren't there, and others, you know, were hostages, and it's just amazing how, even though we're going on 30 years, it's very vivid to everybody.
Yeah,
very vivid.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, Bill, I want to thank you for participating in this project.
Okay.
I really appreciate
You're
it.
You're more than welcome, Sue.
All right.
All righty.
Take care.
Okay. Mm. All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.